Welcome to the next episode of Driving with J9. Today in our Cape Town studio, we have Brandon Cohen. He is the chairman of the National Automobile Dealers Association. Thank you for coming in today, Brandon, and welcome.
Ah, thank you for having me. I love being in Cape Town. So this is awesome.
Yeah, it's a bit colder than Joburg right now, I suppose.
Nah, it's still lovely.
I'm going to jump right into some consumer stuff. So we've had a News24 reader that's purchased a vehicle, I think it was November, December last year. She was quite unhappy with it. She picked up a few problems. She thought that she had followed the correct processes, contacted the ombudsman, all of that, went for diagnostics. The car had gone back to the dealerships. The dealer and the automaker was saying there's nothing wrong with the car. She then sought another alternative opinion with the RMI, which is the retail motoring industry, got diagnostics done through them, and they picked up issues. But the automaker refused, to acknowledge those. But in simple terms, if a customer is unhappy with a vehicle purchase, what are the processes and how long do you have if, for instance, you want to give the car back that you just bought out of the box?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the start of everything is the Consumer Protection Act.
Yeah.
Since 2007, that's been where we look to everything. And in terms of the Consumer Protection Act, there's a automotive code of conduct that was approved by the minister a few years ago. And that really gives the automotive way, so that we're not looking at a toaster or a kettle. Right. Cars are a little bit different. It all starts with Section 56 of the Consumer Protection Act, and that talks to issues with the vehicle, defects, failures, or hazards. Yeah. So the first thing is general unhappiness with the vehicle, buyer's remorse, those kind of things are not covered. Mm. You bought the car.
Right.
But when there are issues with the vehicle, there are certain things. So the Consumer Protection Act says that within 6 months of purchase, right, of a vehicle, new or used, you have the ability to basically give it back. The three options are, if there is an issue, it's replace, repair, or refund, and the consumer chooses which of the three. Okay. Once an election is made, then we usually stick with that. The manufacturer or retailer has the right to check that vehicle to, yes, see, was it really that failure? Was it caused by the vehicle itself? Did the consumer do something? So the code of conduct starts us off. It says the two parties should get together and they should try and resolve that between themselves. And that really does cover almost all issues.
Okay.
Where agreement can't be reached, then there is a motor industry ombudsman. They are experts in the field.
Yeah.
And however, they do get quite a lot of cases, and because they take a lot of in-depth time to look at it, sometimes that does drag on a little,
yes,
bit. But if it's sent to them within the 6 months or,
yes,
or within 6 months of the issue occurring, we're okay. Usually what happens, like you said there, the RMI workshop went and did something, took a look at something, came to a different conclusion to the manufacturer.
Yeah.
When there's a dispute of facts, the best way usually to resolve those is to get a third-party independent expert. So that's not he said, she said. A lot of the things we find on a lot of vehicles is a car is manufactured to a certain specification.
Yeah.
And obviously an entry-level first-time buyer car will have a very different specification to a Rolls-Royce.
Yes.
And the expectations must be different.
Mm.
So some things that consumers do complain about are within the spec of the manufacturer. It,
yeah,
is what it is.
Yeah.
A lot of people complain about fuel economy. If it's way out what the sticker,
yes,
says, there could be a problem.
Yeah.
So that's the best way to resolve it. But consumers have the right to approach the National Consumer Commission. They have the right to go to the Consumer Tribunal. They have the right to go to any one of the courts. So all the law has done is basically just given a sort of start line and said you have all these other options as well. But however, no one will limit the consumer as to which one they need to go.
Yeah.
And hopefully that way we get resolution to no matter what the issue would be.
Okay. Thanks for that. Tell me, I've seen there have been some very interesting findings in the NADA satisfaction index. that probably sounds very foreign to people who don't know what that is. Can you explain what that is and what some of those findings are that you've picked up with consumers or buying trends and so forth?
Yeah, for sure. So the DSI is the Dealer Satisfaction Index. Mm-hmm. What that is it's an annual chance for dealerships to rate their manufacturer or their franchisor.
Yeah.
So dealers know best. They have the cars, they have the clients, they are right in the middle of the entire production. And this gives them the opportunity to say what they do and don't like in an extremely fair manner.
Yeah.
We've also had these questions tested by NIDA USA, and they've come back and they were quite happy with our questions. They suggest, I think, one question changed a little bit. We've also then checked it with the Australian version of NIDA, and so we really have good solid questions, completely anonymous. The manufacturers cannot drill down in any way to try and figure out which dealer it was, because you want the dealers to answer truthfully.
Yes.
And if we were to say, even if it's anonymous, but you could go down to geographic location, they could figure out pretty quickly who the dealer was. So we do this. We have an incredible response rate. It's better than the US, UK or Australian response rates. We get around 87% response rate for passenger vehicles and about 79% response rate for the commercials. And yeah, so in that, what we find every year are things that surprise us and how the trends develop. Certainly dealers that sell a lot more cars are happier with their manufacturer.
Can I just ask what kind of questions are asked in this index?
So it's a lot of different things, some highly technical questions for a dealership in terms of what is, for example, the warranty payment, the labor rates, things like that from your manufacturer. What is their turnaround? Do they supply you with stock, the right stock, the right time? And it's very intense. It's a lot of questions. And there's different weightings for the different questions. We've added new questions on electric vehicles and things like that. It won't be applicable to all brands, but it is there. And it gives you a really good view of what's going on in dealer land.
Yeah.
And who's happy with their manufacturers, who's very unhappy with their manufacturers. And we usually find the unhappy ones don't hold back and the very happy ones also don't hold back.
Yeah.
And most people sit in the middle.
Okay. And sorry, just to go back on the trends that you're picking up, what are those other findings?
The trends are very much like we see in the monthly car sales stats. Consumers are under immense financial pressure. And they, as much as they'd love and want the luxury brands, they certainly can't afford them.
Yeah.
The luxury brands are quite happy with their manufacturers because the manufacturers are definitely trying to support them, but there's only so much you can do on a plus million rand vehicle to bring more customers to get that. So it's not really about people turning away from Lux. It's just that they can't afford the Lux. And the Chinese brands and some of the other new brands into the market really are coming. Great service, great spec, great vehicles. And of course, the dealers are happy because if the customer's happy and they can get their cars and the cars are performing quite nicely and doing that, then the dealers are making a good profit. The customers are rating them very highly from their satisfaction index and they'll buy more and the dealers will be quite happy. What we'll probably see going down the line is as the new brands start entrenching themselves, what the dealer starts saying with an older car that's been, the model's been replaced, are the parts still available? Will the crash panel still be there?
Yeah.
Will the support still be there 5 years, 10 years down the line? And that's going to probably shift our findings because everything's new and shiny now and there's no long-term anything yet.
Yeah. Just, I've noticed that AI is a big part in every aspect of our lives these days. And it's certainly making its way to dealership floors. You get companies like Volvo who only sell certain cars online. I think BMW tried that once. But what would you say is the role of AI on the dealer in the dealership space, rather, where people still prefer human interaction?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think those who ignore AI are going to be left behind, but I don't think it's the panacea that will give you that one big thing over your competition. A good car with good service is still always going to be the best.
Yeah.
I think where AI can come into it is things like people do most of their research online. Most people will not come to a dealership to kick a tire, try five different cars and hope for the best. Yeah. They'll look online and they'll either use AI now to help them do their research. It's a lot easier than doing the normal Google checks. AI can also do rankings. AI can do what hundreds of thousands of people have said about that car.
Yeah.
So I think from a consumer research, AI is good. But also consumers are engaging at very different times and they're going to engage outside of office hours.
Yeah.
And you need to be where your consumer is, otherwise you lose the consumer.
True.
So what we've seen overseas and slowly coming into South Africa is things like a customer goes on a website and is looking at a certain vehicle.
Yeah.
An AI can then come and say, hey, we can see you, more than a chatbot, AI. And we can see you, and it's been trained on all the vehicles, and it can answer most of the questions that a consumer. And then the human beings talking to the AI about the car they want, and if they really want it, they say, yeah, please call me when somebody is there tomorrow morning.
Right.
And then what the AI can do is also hunt the sales execs and say, hey, I've given you that lead. Did you phone the customer?
Yeah.
And if they didn't phone the customer, then it moves it to the manager.
Okay.
So that's where I think AI is really going to be practically helping.
It's interesting you say that because I know two of my colleagues here at work, one has just bought a new car, the other is still busy looking, but they've used AI to do so and do all the research. Like obviously they've got a list of what they want and then they pop in their questions and the things that AI comes up with is very, very interesting.
It is. And with anything, it's how you prompt it and where the machine learnt. However, it's like an engineer buying a vehicle. They will look at all the very practical sides of it. What is its affordability? How is its running cost? How is this? How is that? But most people want something that looks cool, feels cool, and they feel something with it.
And
AI can't capture the feel. So it can probably give you a good list of solid, stable cars. But I still think the human being wants to sit in that car,
and
turn the engine,
take
it for a test drive, feel it, see the reaction, and is it worth the investment?
Yeah, sure. Talking about buying cars, because I've been chatting a lot in my podcast episodes, but when someone goes into a dealership, I don't think they always understand the if and I process, the finance and insurance process. And there's quite an extensive finance application admin process behind that. Can you tell me about that? What is that process that the admin and lease that goes through on behalf of the customer?
It's a great question because you're right. A customer will go in, the focus is purely on the vehicle. They've done their research. They're ready to buy. They've spoken to the salesperson. The salesperson's taken them for the test drive. Yeah. Everything is great. And then all of a sudden when they're trying to just sign and take the car, they say, no, you have to go see this other person.
Yes.
And if it hasn't been explained, it can be quite daunting because salespeople sit on the floor. It's very open. Now you're going into almost the principal's office.
Yes.
You're closing a door behind you. It's very intimidating if you don't know the experience. And all that is for privacy because the finance and insurance manager, think of them more as a concierge.
Right.
You can do a lot of the stuff yourself. You can go on to 5 bank websites and go fill in a finance application. It's usually about 175 to 200 questions.
Yeah.
No one has the same questions, which means you're doing this over 5 times, 1,000 questions.
Right.
Whereas the F&I, this is what they eat, breathe, sleep, do all day. They also have a generic application. They know exactly what to ask. So it's also much quicker. It'll go to multiple banks. The F&I will be asking very intense questions, hence the door being closed and all of that. But what the F&I is really doing is using their expertise, and they understand the banks.
Yeah.
They understand each of the questions. You know, we look at a question and we think, wow, I'm not quite sure what they're asking here. The F&I knows exactly what the bank's trying to find. So the F&I can do a finance app in about 3 to 4 minutes, whereas I sit on the internet, it's taking me an hour just with one bank.
Yeah.
Then the next thing is F&Is also know how to package the deals best for the banks. Because a bank will do credit checks and histories and things like that. And they may come back with a decline because affordability is out. The car's a bit too expensive based on salary. You haven't been in your job long enough.
Yeah.
And the F&I can sit there and repackage the deal. Add this, take this, let's try with more discount. And they know how to get a deal over the line with the bank. Whereas a normal consumer could do it, but phoning a bank and arguing each time and trying to find out and then going back to the dealer. The other side, the I side of F&I, is the insurance side. And we look at something called value-added products.
Yes.
In the dealership, they'll tell the customer it's VAPS. But where that is a car's an exceptionally expensive machine. The F&I is going to offer some things that can probably protect that investment. Mm-hmm. So, and that's insurance and non-insurance products. The things most people will know about are service plans that don't come standard with the vehicle, extending the plans, maintenance plans, warranties, extended warranties.
Okay.
And then there's a range of other things. And what the F&I's job really is to do as a finance broker, understand the customer's affordability, understand what they can spend, and see where they can offer the best products. Consumer can say yay or nay.
Yeah.
And also give the customer what if something goes wrong on their finance or insurance. Yeah.
Yeah. We've also been talking a lot about that, about value-added services, because we recently had a former car salesman in here, and he was saying you don't have to say yes to everything, and you can ask for costs to be explained, what every line item is, basically. But those value-added services also help you if you want to sell your car, like warranties and so forth. So I think they're pretty important. But just going back, there's been a high rate of declined finance applications. What is the role of the F&I in getting the desired outcome for the client?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the banks will decline on a range of reasons. And some of those reasons, there's nothing we can do about it, right? So if the person's got a judgment against them, if the person is noted as a very bad payer and things like that, that's pretty much done.
Yeah.
However, there are a lot of things where there are declines. A bank will decline a client often where they call the client a thin client. It just means the client is very new in this world and they don't have much of a credit history behind them, and the bank is just a little bit worried. So in those areas, the F&I can look at it and say, well, can we get a deposit? Can we do this? Can we reduce the risk to the bank? Because from the bank's perspective, I don't know you, and I can't tell if you're going to be good or bad. So the F&I can then relook at the deal and try and see what they can do, try and take that over the line with the bank. Say, you know, the person is quite new, but look at their family situation, very, very stable, been in a job for a while, they're qualified, they've just got their degree, that's why they've never bought a car before, this is the first vehicle. And the F&I can motivate to the bank. And quite often, I mean, it's still the bank's choice at the end of the day. It's based on their scorecard. Some banks will take more risk than others within the National Credit Act framework. But those are the kind of things where the F&I can take it over the line. Not long enough in employment, the F&I can go and get certain things and also motivate that. They've had five other jobs. They've been very good there. Those kind of things. And that's the kind of thing that an F&I is very, very good at. Most F&Is came out of the banks. So they understand those motivations.
Yeah. And just to finish up, I think, you know, a lot of people, especially first-time buyers, you're going in and you think all you need to do is maybe pop AI bots or some, you know, do your homework on the car that you want. But then they don't understand the other bits about your credit history and insurance and all of those things. Because I think most times you need to have insurance first before, if your application has gone through and you're applying for finance, that you need to have insurance first.
You do. And it is a requirement because the bank will approve subject to. So they'll issue what's called a podium, and the podium will give the approval or decline, the reasons, and what they require. Right. And insurance is always one of those.
Yeah. What are the other things that you would say people need to know besides doing your homework on the type of car that you want or that you think you can afford? What do you need to know, or what do you need to do about your credit history and all of those things?
Yeah, I think that's a big one. And it's, again, this whole concept of F&I. We spend so much time on the vehicle. And I do. I mean, people can use online credit aggregators to go look at their credit score and their credit history and research a bit to find out what that score or history will mean. They can look into a range of things. I think the big thing that people do miss when they're looking at a car, it's quite easy to go whether I can afford the car or not. I do a repayment calculator, I can do it in Excel. But every human is different in terms of how we save, how we drive, and what we do with that car. If one is very prudent and one saves a lot, then maybe don't invest in a service plan if you know you've got the money to pay for every service.
Mm.
But what people don't think about, and South Africans don't save, is do I have the money for the annual service, especially the big service on 90,000 Ks, 5, 10, 15,000 Rand? Do I have the money to, if the warranty is over, if it's a used car, to pay for that new engine, which is 80, 90,000 Rand? Yeah. So if they do and they've got the savings and they've got the funds, great. And I think that's the one side that also catches people a little bit, because you're trying to sell me this thing, I don't really want it. It's just to think about what your lifestyle is, where you'll be in the next couple of years, how long you want to keep the car, and of course whether you want to get a good value for the car at the end. And sold with balance of plan is always less risk to the next buying dealer.
Also, people don't think about things like driving through a very bad pothole, damaging your tire, you need a brand new tire, and might have affected your suspension. That's wear and tear, and that's often things that perhaps aren't covered. So it's things that people don't think about.
Cost of ownership is something, and it can get quite bad on our roads. This is Cape Town, your roads are much nicer. But where I come from, I mean, there's more pothole than road. And you have to look at that. Do you have low profile tires? They look very nice, but man, they're expensive to replace. Yeah. And it's that kind of lifestyle choice and your ability to save for that.
Yeah. Thanks, Brandon. That's been a lot of insight. And I think it's so important that people really listen to this kind of advice when you're making an investment or a purchase like that. But thanks for coming into our studio today. It was really lovely to have you here.
Oh, so great to be here. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. That's it. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Driving with J9.